The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. This is the Showdown. With Showdown Joe on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590.
Welcome to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe, for the next hour. We're going to talk mixed martial arts, UFC, Strikeforce, Dream, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590. Special guest in studio, once again, Tyler the intern. Wait a second, don't say anything. You're not special anymore, because this is what, your fifth or sixth show?
I think it might be my seventh.
It's your seventh show.
Wow. Well, it's up there. I'm not sure yet.
Well, special only because I guess your girlfriend calls you special. We won't get into that conversation, but seventh show or not, you're still an intern, my man. You know that, right?
Oh, I graduated yesterday, though.
Completely irrelevant. Senior producer Bob Torrens from Sportsnet says it's Tyler the intern, and that's it. He may not have a say here at the Fan 590, but I do. It's my show. You're still an intern.
Well, if Bobby and you say it's true, then I guess it's true. Still an intern.
Let's be honest. Whatever Bobby says, we do. That's who are we kidding over
that's
here?
That's true.
But no, you've done a wonderful job thus far. And you, every time we're done a show, we start walking out to the elevator and head back to the car to head back to our lovely locations and houses in Markham. And you've always got, you're getting more comfortable on the air. Are you enjoying this?
Yeah, I definitely feel a lot more comfortable on the air.
You do a wonderful job, man. We get lots of compliments from people that listen. Has your fan base increased from 1 to 2 yet?
I'm not sure. It might be 2. I'm hoping there'll be a third in there soon, but I think, yeah, 1 or 2 is probably correct.
You'll get there. You'll get there one day. You were actually complimenting or looking at my Facebook today. I was at, 4,800 friends?
Oh, yeah, you're almost up around the 5,000 mark, and then they're going to cut you off.
Yeah, I have to create a fan page. So let's hurry up and get this to 5,000, folks. If you're not on my Facebook, just go to Showdown Joe Ferraro on Facebook, and, of course, just get my Twitter up there as well at twitter.com/Showdown Joe. What's yours again?
It's facebook.com/King Mason. Hopefully we can get mine over 300.
Yes, let's do it.
My Twitter is twitter.com/Tyler Mason.
It'll happen. All right. A crazy week in the world of mixed martial arts, and it's like, where do we start? Well, why don't we start with the Ultimate Fighter Season 11 finale. We got to see Court McGee, storybook ending. He becomes the newest Ultimate Fighter, joining the likes of your Forrest Griffins, your Joe Stevensons, your Diego Sanchez's, your Rashad Evans as the next guy to have that label forever attached to him, and at the same time, he wins that six-figure contract. But you notice that they're not calling it a six-figure contract anymore?
No, I don't know. Is it more now?
I think it's probably less.
It's less. Well, the name exposure is priceless, though. Once you're on the Ultimate Fighter, I mean, now if you look at all their top fighters, all their biggest draws, if they weren't on the Ultimate Fighter before, they're on it now as a coach. So the Ultimate Fighter is invaluable if you're a fighter.
Absolutely. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe they do still call it the six-figure contract. They just don't say it as much anymore. And again, it all depends. It could be like 6 fights. First fight's 10 and 10. Second fight's 20 and 20. It all depends on what that contract is. But Court McGee's performance versus Chris McRae was exactly how I had predicted, in terms of he uses a very well-rounded game plan, did a great job against McRae, submitted him in the second round, 3 minutes and 41 seconds in. What did you make of that performance?
I didn't think it was too surprising. Going in, most people were picking McGee as the better fighter, the better wrestler. McRae, he showed a lot of heart on the show. He fought more times than I think anybody ever has. And
5 times, set a record.
You know, he's just a guy that keeps coming forward. But, McGee is just too skilled for McRae. And maybe in a couple of years, McRae can continue training. I think he's with Lloyd Irving. And that's a really good camp to be with, so he can keep improving.
Oh, you and your jiu-jitsu and submissions, I know.
Well, you know, Lloyd Irving's
a bad man.
If you look at the Mundials this year, if you look at the blue belts and the purple belt divisions, he had a ton of guys winning, so you know, they're not there yet because they don't have as much as the top camps out of Brazil. But in a couple of years, that's going to be a force to be reckoned with in jiu-jitsu circles and as well in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, Lloyd Irwin's a bad, bad man. Just ask Brandon Mira. That's all you need to know. And we all know that story about the whole – we won't even get into that. We talked about it before. Co-main event, Matt Hamill taking on Keith Jardine. Matt Hamill was victorious, majority decision. Keith Jardine has now been cut by the UFC. It's funny how there's some sites out there that are also announcing that David Loazzo has been cut. But, you know, we at Sportsnet and MMA Connected, and, of course, here in the Fan 590, you're like, well, welcome to 2 weeks ago. We talked about that at length, about David Loazzo unfortunately getting cut. But Keith Jardine now joins him as, you know, without an employer, and you actually talked about how long do you think it'll take before he gets signed up by Strikeforce. What do you think is going to happen with Keith Jardine's career right now?
I think Stryfors is definitely going to sign him. He's a guy with a name. He's been on the Ultimate Fighter, like we just said, that, you know, propels your stardom, you know, right up there. And Stryfors, their 205 division is really hurting, especially with Babalu winning and refusing to fight King Mo. They don't really have any contenders to go in there. So a guy like Jardine could be, you know, he could easily be in a contender fight and potentially fight for their title. So I don't see why Stryfors wouldn't sign him.
I don't see why he's not still with the Zuf organization. I'll tell you why. Goes back to my WEC theory. WEC should be, you know, the league underneath the UFC, like the AHL is to the NHL, as opposed to cutting loose a Keith Jardine, and you get, you know, he'll get picked up by the likes of Strikeforce, maybe fighting Dream or Bellator, for example, light heavyweight. There's an example of a guy that still has some cachet. If the WEC and the UFC could simply separate in terms of take the elite fighters from the WEC and you put them in the UFC, and take those fighters that are on the brink of getting cut or have been cut, and you send them down to the WEC, if he can't make it into the WEC, you then cut him loose, because by that point there, you know, he's pretty much done. So any UFC fighter that has two losses that are kind of like iffy, send him down to the WEC. Guys coming up the grassroots rank, you put him in the WEC or in the WEC. They do well there. Then you bring them up to the UFC. You create a true farm system. And I think here's a perfect example of a guy like Keith Jardine. Same thing with David Loazzo. Don't cut them loose. You send them down to the WEC to continue to work their trade to see if they can still hang out there. Because Keith Jardine would be a great draw for any WEC event, don't you think?
No doubt.
He can headline a WEC.
I completely agree with you. I think it's the kind of name you don't want to get rid of. I mean, I was kind of expecting them to cut him when they lost to Bader, but if you want to keep names around, like especially a guy like Kimbo, who's a proven draw, if you want to keep these guys around, put them in, like you said, a farm system and keep them under the company name.
And you have a two-way contract, meaning if you fight for the UFC, your win bonus is X, your show bonus is X, your win bonus is X or Y, whatever it would be. But then if you go down to the WEC, it becomes obviously a fraction of amount, whether it's half or not. But at the same time, it's like in hockey, it's a two-way contract.
And another thing is this isn't just for a fighter like Keith Jardine. It's not just for the benefit of him. Having a name like that on a card will bring more people in to watch the fight, and you can showcase, you know, the up-and-comers that you're having coming through that farm system, so people get to know those fighters. And, you know, maybe someone's on the downswing of their career, maybe Vandalay in a couple years or something, when just fights catch up to a fighter. You know, a guy like that can really help you showcase the younger up-and-coming talent. And I think that's
and really
more
test
of the
that
loss.
Younger talent to see if they're ready to move up to the UFC.
And you know what? They kind of are doing it with fight nights. And you know what? Why not keep them around? I think when you have a name that can draw in viewers and showcase other fighters, I think you have to do it.
So I'll have a little conversation with Dana White when I head down to the UFC next week to cover UFC 116, Lesnar and Carwin. I'll probably talk to Joel Silva. I got a whole bunch of conversations I want to have with Joel Silva. Unfortunately, 99% of those conversations, if not more, are generally off the record because Mr. Silva doesn't like doing interviews, but we do chit-chat about a variety of issues in terms of the fighter talent of mixed martial arts. I'll see if I can get a hold of Sean Shelby as well, the WC matchmaker. He's always around with Joe. They hang out, and he's an awesome. They're both guys are completely awesome, as is Dana White, even though I get flack for talking about Dana White so much. But hey, let's be honest. Dana White speaks, people listen, and he's a ratings draw on MMA Connected and other, you know, situations of that nature. Now, Matt Hamill fought with a staph infection on his back. What did you make of that?
This worries me a little bit. I mean,
a little bit.
You can't let a fight, like, I don't know if it's been actually confirmed that it was definitely staph. I mean, there were some doctor reports saying that it was healing up.
It was healed up. It was dried up.
Yeah, and it wasn't actually staph, and that was just Hamill's kind of idea on it. But if he did have staph, this is a serious thing. The commissions have to protect the fighters, and this isn't just the protecting of Matt Hamill. This is a protecting of Keith Jardine as well. You don't want something like staff passing around to other fighters, and even fighters that were fighting, you know, after
Court McGee, Chris McCray, the referees. Yeah,
like, yeah. This stuff can get around, and staff's not a joke. I mean, any wrestler, any grappler out there that has dealt with staff knows, like, this can put you in the hospital. This can cause some serious damage.
Well, hopefully Matt gets better. Hopefully the situation in Nevada with the doctors, they get that rectified, because I don't think there was any reason he should have been fighting. And there's people that are insulting Keith Kaiser right now in some of the comments. And, you know, it's hard to disagree with them. It's hard to agree with some of the stuff that's being said. But at the same time, Hamill should not have been able to fight. Whether or not the UFC would have been upset or not, you know, that thing should have never happened. Moving forward, the crippler. Chris Lieben takes out Aaron Simpson, and I'm sure Kyle from Vegas, regular caller, is listening in right now. Aaron Simpson will likely make Kyle's top 10 list for, what's the proper word we want to use? We don't want to insult Aaron. But a fighter that
poor decision making.
Yes, Aaron Simpson, a stud wrestler, goes in and fights Chris Lieben more with a stand up strategy, which goes back to my theory over and over again. I don't understand certain fighters, and this is what I was talking about having conversations with Joe Silva and Dana White in terms of what do you tell these guys afterwards? Like, what were you thinking? Forget about the surprise element of trying to stand and bang with a Chris Lieben. The guy's got an iron chin. Unless your name is Anderson Silva, forget about it. Okay, you don't have the striking power. Take Lieben down. Take him to where your strength is and beat him there. Lieben has a granite chin and a left hand that doesn't appear to have too much power, but knocks people out.
And he has no quit. I mean, it kind of reminds me of a line in Pulp Fiction that I can't really say on the air, but it has to do with pride. And I think pride messes with a lot of these fighters. And it always annoys me when I see a great wrestler go out there and he just loves to throw power punches. And you know his striking isn't up to par with his punching. And for a guy like Simpson to do that against a brawler and a striker like Lieben, it wasn't smart. And this is one of the surprises on the card. I couldn't predict that Lieben was going to win this fight.
What about the surprise between Dennis Siver and Spencer Fisher? On MMA Connected, I said that Spencer Fisher has some of the best ground and pound, the best ground and pound, some of the best ground and pound in the lightweight division. I may have overstep my boundaries by saying that. I think perhaps some of the most underrated ground and pound. I don't think some of the best, and I don't know why I said that, but sometimes, you know, I speak for no apparent reason, as you can tell. But at the same time, Spencer Fisher should not have stood and trade there with Dennis Siver. In my opinion, I think Spencer Fisher's game plan against Siver should have been get this dude down to the ground because I'm better than him on the ground. I firmly believe that. Siver's submission game or grappling in general in the UFC is a rarity, right? So there's no real surprise element there. Spencer Fisher has submissions on his record. He should have taken Siver down and really shown the king can take guys out. And now he's got a unanimous decision loss on his record to Dennis Siver, and Siver's slowly but surely moving his way up the rankings.
Yeah, this is another one I didn't think Fisher was going to lose it. I mean, he's kind of funny with Fisher. I mean, there are times where he shows brilliance on the feet.
Oh, yeah.
When he fought Sam Stout, that was some of the best mixing up of combinations that I've seen in a mixed martial arts fight. And he's one of the most talented overall as a fighter. I mean, he's not great in all aspects of the game, but he's very good at pretty much all.
Yeah, he's a cool guy too. Really good interview. I interviewed him, I think it was in UFC 104 in LA, if I'm not mistaken. But he was just a complete gentleman. He didn't fight in the card. He was just one of the guests that was out there. Or did he fight in the card? Regardless, it was when he fought Joe Stevenson. So I think that was 104. But irregardless, he's just a nice guy. I just don't understand that game plan. Now talk about Rich Antonito and Jamie Yeager, and you know, a lot of my friends that were watching The Ultimate Fighter said Yeager was going to win the show, and I said, look, Yeager's knocking guys out. But before you start thinking that guy, you know, a fighter with that type of skill level continues to beat on guys, eventually he's going to run into a fighter that's going to push him, that's going to test him. That's when you really see a champion's heart and you see what they do when they realize everything that they're throwing isn't working. They've got to use a different game plan. And as we saw in that first round, he was loading up on all his punches and kicks, and it was a matter of time before that gas tank started going to nothing. Antonito took advantage of it, finished him off.
I think this is a fight where Yeager's power and strength got the better of him. I mean, he's probably used to pushing guys around, and he's a bigger 185er, and he can throw heavy hands and knock guys out. When you run into a guy like Antonito, who's, you know, he can last with you and he can wrestle, that's a bad thing for a striker with no gas tank.
Of course. Also, Mark, Boots Holst, Canadian guy coming out of Ottawa, made his debut for me back in the day. I think it was in 2006. I called his first fight, made his UFC debut against John Gunderson. Unfortunately for Mark, Gunderson blanketed him for three straight rounds, earned a unanimous judge's decision. The other really interesting fight was Travis Brown taking out James McSweeney via TKO in that first round. McSweeney is trying to appeal that it was elbows to the back of the head because there was a nice cut in the back of his head, but I don't think anyone from Nevada is going to overturn that. And of course, the WEC made its debut in Canada at Rexall Place in Edmonton. We'll talk about the WEC and arguably one of the fights of the year, a candidate featuring two Canadians. You're listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio.
Way more than just the score. Sports Insight on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590 and fan590.com. This is the Showdown with Showdown Joe on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome back to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, WEC, Strikeforce, Bellator, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. Once again in studio, we're no longer calling him special unless you happen to be his girlfriend, his mom, or some of his family members. Tyler, the intern. Tyler, everything all right?
Yeah, everything's going good.
All right.
I can still think properly.
Awesome. We're talking WEC 49 right now. The WEC made its debut at Rexall Place in Edmonton, Alberta. Great show. Some great performances. We'll get to a potential Fight of the Year candidate momentarily. But the first one we want to talk about was the main event. A draw between Jamie Varner and Kamaru Usman. There's so many things to discuss in this fight. Namely, and I'll start it off because, you know, my job on MMA Connected, as well as here on the Showdown, is sometimes to break down fights and to give predictions on the natural assumption that a fighter, for example, Kamaru Usman, a extremely high caliber level wrestler, takes on a guy like Jamie Varner, who's a great striker. When I see something like that and I look at history, I think to myself, well, Jamie Varner's going to try and keep his fight standing up. Kamaru Usman, the wrestler, is going to dictate where this fight's going to go. He's going to take this fight down on the ground whenever he wants, however he wants. Let's get this done. Kamaru Usman shows up at Rexall Place in Edmonton and decides to stand and trade with Jamie Varner for 3 rounds. After the first round, you could just imagine what I was thinking. You could just imagine what Kyle from Vegas was thinking. What were you thinking?
Well, we've seen this before with Usman, where they'll have a really good wrestler in there with him. You know, Varner may not be the best wrestler he's ever faced, but he'll just shuck off their takedown attempts, and he'll choose to stand and bang with them because he's got a great chin, he's got heavy hands, and you'll see a lot of wrestlers that do that. But for this fight, it was definitely the poorer strategy to take. I mean, he should.
You were going to say bonehead.
Yeah, well, he should have definitely be taking Varner down. I mean, when you have Olympic caliber wrestling,
he's so good, man.
You have Olympic caliber wrestling, international wrestling, and you don't use it. It's mind boggling. I don't. It's like Anderson Silva choosing not to strike.
Yeah, against a wrestler.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. I think this might be another case of pride where Usman just thinks, you know what, I'm going to stand and bang. I want to go in there and throw heavy hands, take my punches, because there were times where he was getting hit with heavy shots and he was smiling and laughing.
He hooked up.
Yeah, and he was thinking, you know what? You can't knock me down. You can't knock me out. But someday somebody's going to hit him with a hard enough shot and he's going to get knocked out. Everyone can be knocked out.
And I don't think I had a chance to listen to what his cornermen were saying, but if I'm in his corner, now, I've seen it before, and you know, our good friend Jason McDonald went through this where, you know, the game plan was simple, and he just, for some reason, when he gets out there, he's not able to follow it. Kamaru Usman had no business standing and trading with Jamie Varner, and the draw itself is obviously questionable. Everybody is talking about this fight in terms of Jamie Varner should have won this fight. The second issue would have been Josh Rosenthal, who I had the pleasure of meeting at UFC 114, the referee. Super nice guy. Super nice guy. Just very polite. We talked so much about refereeing. Just an awesome guy. But I was surprised that Josh didn't take away a point the second time when he should have taken away the point. What did you think?
Well, after you've already taken a point, you should probably take another point. But here comes in the problem of the judging system with MMA. If you're going to take 2 points away from a guy when it's a 3-round fight, that is basically giving the other guy the fight.
Bingo.
And in boxing, there's 12 rounds, so those points mean a lot less. So the system definitely needs some sort of revamping. I don't necessarily know what it is myself just yet, but you can't. I think that's why Rosenthal chose not to take the extra point, is because it would have basically been handing the decision to Farner. And the other thing is there's also some controversy around the actual groin shots themselves, where some may have connected and may not have connected as hard as Varner made them out to seem, and others, you know, connected, but just not in the groin. It was in the upper thigh region, which, you know, if you've seen with GSP and Matt Hughes, can cause a lot of pain because of all the nerve endings there. And Matt Hughes even said after his fight that he was faking a groin shot because it shocked him so much. So it could have been that kind of situation. So there was a lot of things going on in this fight that kind of put the decision up in the air. I think the draw is probably probably the right decision, depending on how you want to score these rounds. But yeah, very, very weird fight. Poor strategies, weird decisions. Calls into question a lot of judging in MMA. So yeah, it was an interesting fight.
There's no controversy in MMA judging. What are you talking about?
Definitely need a revamp, though.
Yes, absolutely. And I've had my suggestions, and I've written enough articles and spoken about them at length. We'll let that go until another day. What about the co-main event? This was a fight of the year candidate, and I thought after watching this fight between London's Mark the Machine Hominick and Montreal's Yves Jabouin, the Tiger, that this was fight of the night. But before I was able to finish my sentence, I hearkened back to Leonard Garcia and the Korean Zombie, and I thought to myself, nah, that was fight of the year. Then they go to the post-fight interview with Mark Hominick, and who does Mark Hominick call out? Leonard Garcia. I was just smiling ear to ear, and I said, I can't wait to write the recap for this show, for MMA Connected, as well as talk about this on the Showdown, because that's exactly what was going through my mind. Let's put the end to the debate. Which fight was fight of the year? Let's put the two guys that won these two fights, even though I think the Korean Zombie won that fight, but that's another story altogether. Hominick calls out Garcia after being sort of, you know, steered into calling out Jose Aldo, and he's like, no disrespect, I want to fight Leonard Garcia. Now, this fight here with Hominick and Jabouin, I mean, it was ridiculous. I think the Sportsnet stats had 121 strikes being thrown in that first round. At the same time, Hominick fired off a Twitter message that, you know, after he got dropped in the second round, he says he got home, he watched the fight, doesn't even remember getting dropped in the second round. That's when you know you've taken a little bit of a beating in the fight. But at the same time, he nailed Jabouin with those liver shots that were brutal, and he wasn't able to finish off Jabouin against the cage. Jabouin answers with a beautifully, perfectly timed, I think it was a right hook?
I think it was a right hook.
So right hook. Tries to finish him off, unable to finish him off. Hominick uses a beautiful sweep, which, by the way, I think I learned in my second or third jiu-jitsu class. It's one of the oldest sweeps in the book. Jabouin must have been completely just exhausted to not be able to prevent that. And then, you know, there comes a TKO. He starts punching rain down bombs and drops him. When you watched that fight, was your heart rate not just through the roof?
This fight was amazing. Before the fight even started, I didn't expect Jabouin to look that good. Coming in, I thought Mark Hominick was going to pick him apart and win this fight. You can see with Hominick, he's more accurate. He was conserving his energy better, and he has great cardio. But Jabouin, I couldn't believe how many strikes he was throwing and how active a pace he was keeping. It blew me away. He looked phenomenal, and it was just Hominick getting the better shots. He was hitting more accurately, hitting the right spots, and he was conserving his energy better. And there was a point when Jabouin was on the fence and Hominick was beating on him, and it was right before Jabouin hit him with that hook, and I was so sure they were going to stop that fight. And then I was so glad that they didn't, because there's nothing better in any sport than to see a team or an athlete come back from, you know, near defeat and put some more excitement into it. So that was really impressive.
And sorry, the one thing that I really enjoyed overall about, you know, leading into this fight and what Hominick said, 8 years in the making. This fight was 8 years in the making. Can you guess where this 8 years in the making fight should have happened? Under my umbrella when I was with the Universal Combat Challenge. Both these guys were fighting for us, and we tried to set up the fight. It just wasn't happening. I think Jabouin left the sport for a little bit. Hominick continued to do what he was doing. He ended up becoming the featherweight champion, but it was a fight that was supposed to be put together in Montreal under the Universal Combat Challenge and the TKO banner. So when Hominick said that, again, made me smile ear to ear. So the fact that this fight finally got to happen under the WC banner is good enough for me. Trust me, I was very happy to see them go, and just unbelievable performance.
And I think it's really smart of Hominick to call out Leonard Garcia. I mean, this is going to be win-win for everybody. For the WEC, you're going to have an exciting fight with guys who are proven strikers who can keep, you know, really good paces. And it's going to be a style fight for strikers. You're going to have a brawler with heavy hands versus a more accurate cardio machine like Hominick. And I think this is a fight that Hominick can win.
And both guys are good on the ground, too.
And I think with Hominick picking Garcia, it's you're picking a guy who you can beat and who's already had a title shot. And I think it's pretty obvious at this point that Gamburian is next in line for Jose Aldo. So I think, you know, if Hominick can get through Garcia, if they make that fight, we'll have a Canadian fighting for the 145 title.
Is Josh Grisby, who took out Elsie Davis, next in line for Jose Aldo? because that was a great fight. 2 seconds. Like, I mean, it was 2 minutes and 33 seconds, but that guillotine choke on Elsie Davis. You made a funny comment on the way down to Sportsnet about Yves Levine, the referee, unfortunately having a difficult time in the Mac Danzig fight, stopping the fight, you know, quote-unquote too early, but lets this one go, quote-unquote a little too late. I don't think it was too late. I think, you know, Grisby had that guillotine on perfectly, but Elsie Davis choked unconscious. Poor Yves Levine can't win either way.
Yeah, I mean, there's... I don't know if there's anybody questioning his refereeing in this fight, but you know, some could say it was a little bit too late. I think the worst thing though was the television angle they had.
Oh yeah,
because when Davis's head came back, he looked like a zombie because his eyes had rolled back because he was unconscious. That's just unfortunate. I mean, anyone who knows that trains or does anything with MMA and jiu-jitsu and that knows that chokes are some of the more safer.
Yeah, you wake up pretty quick.
Yeah, and there's no long-term damage, nothing like that. I mean, I'd much rather be choked out than have, you know, an arm lock or anything like that put on me. So, you know, I'm sure Elsie Davis is fine. And, yeah, Grisby looked great. I mean, technically, he maybe looked a little bit rusty. I mean, he's one of those awkward fighters. I'm sure we're going to talk about another awkward
fighter.
Isn't that the first
fight back after a year?
Yeah, and he doesn't look like it doesn't look pretty. But he gets the job done. And,
oh, I know where you're going with this conversation.
Yeah, we're going to get to, that, I guess, that fighter later on. But, yeah, and I'm down the line. He's definitely going to be a guy who's going to be in contendership for that title. And it looks like the WC's 145 division is just getting stronger and stronger.
All right, we'll get to that fight in 2 seconds. We'll go really quickie here. Chris Hordeski against Daniel Downs. He comes out with a rear naked choke. You believed he should have finished off Downs quicker?
I mean, yeah, this is a fighter in Downs. Is a guy who did not look good, came in a short notice, definitely didn't belong in there with a guy like Hordeski. And for Hordeski not to finish it earlier, I mean, it's kind of like the Fedor guys who say, oh, he didn't finish him quick enough, right? But you know what? Hordeski didn't look great. I'm sure he'll bounce back. He'll get back in the gym and he'll look better in his next fight.
Eddie Weiland takes out Will Campuzano. That was a great fight. That KO was a punch to the body that dropped him. But the one that surprised me the most was Will Kerr taking out Karen Darbedian in a minute and 20 seconds. I had Darbedian winning this fight, blindfolded, hands in his shorts, no problem.
Yeah, I had Darbedian as well. This one surprised me. And just to harken back on the Weiland-Campuzano fight, that fight was great.
That was an awesome
fight.
That
was really good.
That body shot. I thought Campuzano was going to win that fight. I think Weiland had the skills to do it, only because Campuzano's striking, the style that he has, is a little bit, it's more, I wouldn't say refined, but just more difficult to deal with, and Weiland did a spectacular job in doing that. Now, you're talking about a fighter that is awkward. I'm trying to disagree with you, but the more we watch this guy fight, the more I realize, man, this guy is just something out of control. Ben Funky Askren. And yes, my prediction was right. I might want to rub that in there.
I gotta give you some props on that one. I definitely took Hornbuckle on that one.
Defeats Dan Hornbuckle in the finals of the Bellator Season 2 welterweight tournament. We actually watched that fight again before coming onto the station, or coming into the radio station right now. Askren just gets it done. It's just, it's an awkward-looking style, but it works. Before, like, he's got that sort of smothering, you coined an awesome phrase.
Oh yeah, I said it was a maul and brawl.
We're trying to find out if someone else has used maul and brawl, but maul and brawl is exactly what Ben Askren does. He gets on top of you, and it's like he sticks to you, and you never know what he's doing. Oh, he got the mount. You never know what he's doing. Oh, he's got an arm bar. Oh, he's in your guard, half guard, mount. What is this guy doing? It doesn't look normal.
It doesn't look technical. It doesn't look pretty, but he's getting the job done. And, you know, there is technique in it. It's just his nickname is proper, Funky. It's just everything he does is really funky. I mean, he was shooting in from really far. The first shot of the fight was from really far out. Hornbuckle
was in the dressing room when he took that shot.
Yeah, Hornbuckle could have easily defended it. All that Askren had was his foot, and he just wouldn't let go until he got to that opportunity where he had his ankle up in the air and he just inside leg trip.
All right, we're going to talk more about Bellator tonight's fights, and we'll talk about Strikeforce this weekend. Saturday night, Fedor is returning to the octagon, or to the cage. Oops, shouldn't have said that there. You're listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio.
Share your passion for sports. Everything you talk about is on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590 and fan590.com.
Welcome back to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, Strikeforce, Bellator, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590. Tyler the Intern in studio once again. We are going to talk real quick about Bellator before we get to Strikeforce tonight. I think happening right now, so we could already be wrong with the predictions we're about to make. We just don't have access to the viewing right now. Two finales and tournaments. The first one is a middleweight tournament. The two finalists, Brian Baker, taking on Alexander Shlemenko.
Shlemenko.
Easy for me to say. I'm going with Baker.
I'm going to go with Baker as well. He's looked better in his last two fights, and I haven't been really impressed with Shlemenko in his last two. So.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, Shlemenko's not bad. He's an okay striker. He's a good striker. I just think Baker's going to just sort of, you know, take care of him and we'll do the right thing to come out victorious. But the fight that I'm really looking forward to is the featherweight finals. And there you are, punching yourself, getting all excited. Patricio Pitbull, who unfortunately took out our very own Will Romero from Iron Tiger. I'm very upset about that fight still, but that's all good. He's in the finals. He's taking on Joe Warren. Joe Warren is an absolute stud. So is Pitbull. Who do you got in this fight?
I'm going to have to go with Pitbull. I mean, he took out one of the guys I thought was going to win, Wilson Hayes. So I'm going to say that he catches Warren in an armbar. Whether or not he finishes it is, you know, that really depends on if Warren wants his arm to break or not. But I'm going to say he catches him in an armbar because Warren tends to get caught in those.
You know what my favorite part of this radio show is? Every time you're wrong. And I'm going to pick Joe Warren because you're going to be wrong. I think Joe Warren is going to some way, somehow squeak out a victory, ground and pound, some way, somehow. He's just, you know, he's another awkward guy. He's like Ben Askren. So we'll see what happens. But
is he going to maul and brawl him?
A Maul and Brawl. I like the Maul and Brawl. I think there's some t-shirts coming out soon from Tyler the Intern, Maul and Brawl. But regardless, you know, we're looking forward to seeing that hopefully later on tonight. If not, we'll catch us sometime tomorrow. Bellator Season 2, the two tournament finales are going down tonight. Now, let's get to Strikeforce because there's all kinds of conversations we can talk about. Fedor Emelianenko's returning to the cage, taking off Fabricio Werdum. I want to leave that fight to the very end. We'll go through it really quick. The other four fights or three fights that are going to be airing on the main card. The undercard, we don't know exactly if any of these fights are going to make it onto the actual airing. But for now, Pat Healy taking on Josh the Punk Thompson is the first fight of the evening. Don't underestimate Pat Healy. This guy finds ways of winning. This guy's got two victories over Ryan Ford.
And that's no joke. And he has a victory over Carlos Condit.
Yes, Carlos Condit, exactly. But Josh Thompson is an elite lightweight. Does Pat Healy have what it takes to defeat Josh Thompson, or will he defeat Josh Thompson? Right now, I'm saying no.
I think this is a harder fight to call than a lot of people think, because you got to remember, Pat Healy is a guy who's fighting at welterweight.
Yes.
And it is now 155, yeah, where he probably feels a lot stronger. And, you know, going with a guy like Josh Thompson, he's one of the top guys. He's really good. He can get in there and fight with anybody. But you know what? I'm going to pick Thompson, but I'm going to say that, you know, don't sleep on Pat Healy.
Pat Healy wins this fight. This is going to be, you know, almost a well-deserved coming-out party for this guy because he's such a talented fighter. I still think Josh has what it takes to defeat him, and I'm not saying easily. I just think his skill set's just that much better. But Pat Healy does have some skills that'll surprise a lot of people. Pay very close attention to this fight, ladies and gentlemen, because Pat Healy can pull out the upset. Scott Smith taking on Kung Lee, the rematch of rematches. Scott Smith always, you know, generally 99.9% of the mixed martial arts world's favorite fighter. This guy just always finds a way to win. Doesn't have the greatest amount of skill, but the biggest heart. Arguably some of the biggest heart in mixed martial arts. Kung Lee says he learned from his mistake the last time. Javier Mendez was very upset with him in the corner when he came out and he fought Smith, and Smith did emerge victorious in their first fight. Who wins the rematch?
I'm going to go with Kung Lee, but I have to say Scott Smith is a guy who's earned his new nickname because I don't think the Hands of Steel moniker suits him anymore, the comeback kid.
Yeah.
Because you can never count Scott Smith out. I mean, this is a promotion's dream. Like, he's the kind of guy, it's like watching Rocky, you know? You put him in there with anybody, he's overmatched, but people are going to watch because he's done it time and time again where he just lands that one Hail Mary shot and he wins the fight.
Yeah, you know what? Sorry, Scott, if you're listening, because we've had numerous, you know, good times. Kung Lee. And I'm going to go with Kung Lee in this fight only because I think Kung Lee is going to be a little bit more patient. He's going to land his shots. He's going to win it probably by decision with his striking. He's just going to be a lot more methodical, and he's not going to go in there, overextend himself, and try and trade bombs with this guy. He's going to be in and out, use his footwork, and play some magic. Well, if Scott Smith pulls this off again, I'll be completely surprised. But, you know, I'm going with Kung Lee.
And but I have to say, Scott Smith is the kind of fighter that makes me happy when I'm wrong.
Yes. So true. Only because you can't stop smiling ear to ear because of what he does. But irregardless. Now,
I pick against him like most of the fights that he's the underdog in, and he keeps winning. So
it's like me and Randy Couture and again, me and Brock Lesnar. I always pick against them. And anyways, we'll get into that another time. Unfortunately, we have a fight here, you know, women's middleweight title for Strikeforce. Christian Cyborg Santos, a massive. Is massive an understatement favorite? Like, she's a favorite in this fight versus Jan Finney. I almost feel bad for Jan Finney. I mean, if you see Jan Finney, she's a beautiful girl, and it's one of those girls where it's like, I just, you know, God bless your soul for stepping in there with Cyborg, but I don't like your chances. Then again, you made a good point about Sokuju and Rogério. There was one point where Rogério was such a heavy favorite that no one gave Sokuju a chance. Like, it was just ridiculous, and Sokuju smashed him. You know, can Jan Finney smash Cyborg?
I don't think so. But, I mean, this is probably...
Thanks for the lead up there.
There's probably only two fights in MMA that have had more overwhelming odds for the favorite, and that would be GSP and Matt Serra and Sokuju and Rogério Nogueira. In this case, however, I don't think they're going to pull a Matt Serra or Sokuju upset up. I think Cyborg is just too strong and too technical.
If Jan Finney wins, should we quit?
Well, you know, I'm not going to quit.
I will be blown away. I mean, listen, a fight's a fight. 4-ounce gloves. You know, Christian Cyborg makes a mistake somewhere. Bang, she gets hit with a shot. You know, her gas tank goes to nothing. Finney finishes her off. Sure, anything can happen. But Cyborg is just tough as nails. I saw her, like I said, in Big Bear when I was interviewing Tito, and I just took one look at her when we were by the door, stepped over by the cage. I'm like, I am not putting on my gloves and putting in a mouth guard in and doing any fight schools with her because she's mean and tough as nails. And, you know, they showed some of the stuff from the open workouts, and I do not want to even hold pads for this woman.
I'm wondering if Kyle's going to put any money on Jan Finney.
Kyle would put money on Jan Finney only because the odds are incredible. That's what Kyle does. All right. So it's safe to say that we're both picking Jan Finney?
I know.
All right. We're taking Cyborg. All right. Main event. Seriously, main event here. Fedor Emelianenko taking off Fabricio Werdum. I'm going to come out flat out and say this. I'm having a very difficult time picking Fedor in this fight. I know people are like, what? He's the greatest heavyweight of all time? Of course he's the greatest heavyweight of all time. It goes without saying that this guy, it's going to take a long time before anyone is ever going to be considered in the same breath as Fedor Emelianenko when you look at the historics of what he's done and defeating the caliber of competition he defeated when Pride was the biggest MMA organization and had all the best heavyweights. But now we all know the best heavyweights are in the UFC. He hasn't fought anyone at that caliber yet. We've seen in his last few fights, namely Arlovsky and namely against Brett Rogers, the slow starts that he has. If Werdum can protect his chin and get this fight down to the ground, we might see an upset here. And, you know, it, for me, it's just too easy to pick Fedor. I'm picking Werdum.
I'm going to pick Fedor, but I'm going to say if there's ever a time to bet against Fedor, it's in the twilight of his career. I mean, the guy's an animal. He beats everyone. But the one thing about Fedor that, you know, I'm impressed with, and I know a lot of fans are impressed with, is he's not the kind of fighter that you watch and you say, that guy's superhuman. He's the kind of fighter where you watch and he goes, he's human. I mean, there's been times where he's been rocked. There are times when he's been slammed on his head. There are times where he's, you know, been in a Kimura or he gets out of the brink of defeat. And there are other times where he just completely dominates guys. So, I mean, he shows that he's human. He shows that he can be beaten, but he finds a way to win. You know, I'd never like picking against high-level jiu-jitsu guys, but, you know, I have to go with Fedor just because this is a guy who, you know, I don't think knows how to lose.
I'm still going Werdum. I know that, you know, this is one of those picks that I believe, you know what, there's nothing, you know, Fedor is just, he's better at everything than Verdum, minus the jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is obviously higher caliber. Verdum's higher caliber. I'm still going to pick Verdum in this fight to pull off the upset some way, somehow. It's just too easy for me to pick Fedor, and, you know, he's always going to be one of my favorite fighters. You know, he's just a class guy. Now, he did make some comments about the UFC, you know, but then he kind of backtracked him and wanted to get some clarification that he didn't want to insult the UFC, and that, you know, I'm a firm believer. I don't think he's ever coming to the UFC. I'm going to stick by that, but he did say that after these two fights are up with Strikeforce, which I'm sure Scott Coker and Showtime are absolutely loving, that the UFC can offer Fedor a contract to see if he may accept it. Irrelevant, because 1 week from now, we've got about 30 seconds left, 1 week from now, Shane Carwin is taking on Brock Lesnar, and then after that, later on this year, it's Cain Velasquez taking on the winner. Whoever comes out victorious of these three guys, they will be considered the number one heavyweight in the world, whether Fedor defeats Verdum and Alistair Overeem or not. Agree or disagree?
Well, after if Fedor does beat Verdum and he does beat Overeem, I mean, I'm sure he'll still be among the elite, maybe even number one. But I think the monkey wrench in that whole thing is Dos Santos. I mean, once the Dos Santos fight happens, that fourth fight the fourth fighter in those three that you're mentioning, I think that is the fight that will probably change the rankings. I mean, I think Fedor can stay atop with Overeem and Verdum if he can get through them. But I think once you have a champion that's gone through, you know, Lesnar, Carwin, Dos Santos, and Cain Velasquez, I think that's going to change the rankings.
We'll see what happens later on this year. But for now, make sure you tune in Saturday night. It's Verdum taking on Fedor Emelianenko. You've been listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.